Prajapati Kadamasya Tapo Yoga Vibhrimitam Svagranasyam Anupamyam Patayam Vanimayarapi Pratapate Kadarmasya Tapo Yoga Vrimbimbitam Svagrahastyam Anupamyam Partam Vemanikerapi Prajapate of the progenitor of mankind. Kardamasya, Kardama Muni, Tapa by austerity, Yoga by yoga, Rajmimbitam developed, Swagarhastyam, his home and household, his home and household paraphernalia. Anupampayam, unequaled. Pratyam, inevitable. Enviable. Enviable. Vaimanikya, by the denizens of heaven. Api, even. Translation. The home and household paraphernalia of Kardama was one of the Prajapatis, was developed in such a way by dint of his mystic powers of austerity and yoga that his opulence was sometimes envied by those who travelled in outer space in airplanes. Translation responsibly. The home and household paraphernalia of Kardama, who was one of the Prajapatis, was developed in such a way, by dint of his mystic powers of austerities and yoga, that his opulence was sometimes envied by those who travelled in outer space in airplanes. Purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. The statement in this verse that Kardama Muni's household affairs were envied even by persons who travelled in outer space refers to the denizens of heaven. Their airships are not like those we have invented in the modern age, which fly only from one country to another. Their airplanes were capable of going from one planet to another. There are many such statements in the Srimad Bhagavatam from which we can understand that there were facilities to travel from one planet to another, especially in the higher planetary systems. Who can say that they are not still traveling? The speed of our airplanes and space vehicles is very limited, but we have already studied. Kardama Muni traveled in outer space in an airplane which was just like a city, and he journeyed to see all the different heavenly planets. That was not an ordinary airplane, nor was it ordinary space travel. But Kardama Muni was such a powerful mystic yoga, his opulence was envied by the denizens of heaven. Om Agyana Timiranda Syaganan Jana Salakaya Chakshuram Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Sri Krishna Jaitanya Prabhu Nichananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasati Gora Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya, Krishna Vistaya, Bhutadeva, Shimari Vidayananda Daska, Swami Chaya Deva, Vijaya. So, let's talk a little bit about no ordinary airplane. This is always a fascinating subject matter. Who's heard of UFOs? So let's talk about UFOs and aliens. Okay, so this wasn't an ordinary airplane that Kardama Muni had. It was a city. It had parks, it had opulences, it had rivers going through, it had beautiful flowers and trees, You know, even Kardama Muni and Devahuti on this beautiful airplane that was floating around from the heavenly planets one place to the other, they had maidservants and manservants that were looking after all their needs. It was just an amazing thing. And sometimes in the Grihastha ashram, sometimes our ladies, our married ladies, make this the benchmark for their marriage, you know. Sometimes it's brought up that, hey, listen, Kardama Muni gave so much jewelry to his wife and so much opulence and so many beautiful buildings. What's happening here, you know? So we get that. So the Grihastha men have to make as much facility as possible for their beautiful wives. This is the standard that is being set here by Kardama Muni. So they flew everywhere by the power of Kardama Muni, like they traveled to all the different heavenly planets. And the whole thing was just a beautiful setting. It's a wonderful environment that Kardama Muni created. And this was because of his massive power. He was a powerful yogi and a powerful mystic. And above all else, he was a great devotee. So he had great power. And this is the power of a person. We are limited to understanding the actual power that we have. Devotees, and everybody in fact, has great abilities to do things. But because we're in this paradigm of thinking we're these material bodies and limited, a great scientist has said that actually we use a fraction of our abilities. Our mind and our brain capacity and our ability to do things use a fraction of our abilities. So this was Kardama Muni. He just created this facility for his wife. Here we go, my dear. We have this beautiful airplane. We'll travel to all the different heavenly planets. And so he was the envy of even the demigods. Now you would think the demigods, they've got it together. They've got beautiful arrangements. You know, we read in the different scriptures how wonderful the demigods live. They live for hundreds of years. There's no pain, no suffering. And yet they still envied Kardama Muni for what he had created. This is what's mentioned here in the purport. So this is a natural sort of occurrence in a person's mind. You know, when a materialist sees that someone has something better than them, what happens is that, oh, I want the same. I want that as well. You know, and this is what makes the world go around, you know, keeping up with the Joneses. That's that phrase that they use. I've got to keep up with the Joneses. If our next door neighbour gets, this is a materialist, if a next door neighbour gets a beautiful car, see that, they got a new car, we have to get a new car. Or they got a new swimming pool, oh, we have to get a swimming pool. And so they go into great debt to keep up with the Joneses, to keep up with their next door neighbour, because they're envious. So this is the nature. And something like that also happens to devotees at times. Sometimes devotees, because of their immaturity, sometimes we also envy other devotees. Oh, I wish I could have that person's service. Oh, he's got it made, you know, or she's got it made. I envy her, or I envy him. So this is something that has to be checked, you know, and we have to check that every time. When we feel that negative thing coming up in us, thinking that, oh, I envy that person, we have to check it. So here we're seeing that this is all about, this chapter is a fascinating chapter about UFOs. And are UFOs mentioned in the Shastras? They are. And it's really quite amazing, you know. And who are aliens, actually? You know, these are all mystic sort of mysteries that we delve in. How do you go? And we try to fathom, you know, it's been a great mystery, you know, do they really exist and all this kind of thing. But when we actually analyze who are aliens really, you know, they're not the big lotus-eyed with long hands and tentacles and everything. Actually, every one of us sitting here in this room are all aliens. We don't belong here. We come from another place and we've come here. We didn't ask to do it, but we're actually aliens. Because we belong in the spiritual world. We don't belong in this material world. So actually we're sojourning in this material world and we're aliens. So we have to actually analyze a little bit. And I thought, okay, let's do a bit of research about UFOs through the scriptures. It's quite interesting. I want to read a little bit about the UFOs in the Vedic scriptures are called Vimanas. Vimanas. And so here I've researched a little bit, and I want to read this out to you, what the Vedas say about UFOs or Vimanas. There are many ancient Vedic texts that describe or contain references to these Vimanas, including the Ramayana, the Mahabharata, the Rig Veda, Yajurveda, Atharva Veda, plus other classic Vedic texts like the Satapatya Brahmana, the Mandakya Purana, the Vishnu Purana, the Bhagavad Purana, and others. From various descriptions in these writings, we find Vimanas in many different shapes, including that of long cigars, right? Blip-like saucer shapes, triangular, even double-decked, and with portholes and domes on top of a circular craft. Some are silent, some belch fire, some make noise, and some have humming noise, and some disappear completely. This is all from the Vedas, right? It is explained that not until the beginning of Treta Yuga that the development of Vimanas took place. In fact, Lord Brahma, the chief demigod and the engineer of the universe, is said to have developed several Vimanas for some of the other demigods. These were in various shapes that incorporated the use of wings, such as peacocks, eagles, swans, etc. Other Vimanas were developed from the wise for wiser human beings by great seekers of Vedic knowledge. In the course of time, there were three basic types of Vimanas. In the Treta Yuga, men were adept in mantras or potent hymns. Thus, the Vimanas of that age were powered by means of knowledge of mantras. So by mantras, they could fly, these Vimanas. Haribol Prabhu. In Dvapara Yuga, men had developed considerable knowledge of tantra or ritual. Thus, the Vimanas of the Dvapara Yuga were powered by the use of tantric knowledge. In the Kali Yuga, knowledge of both mantra and tantra are deficient. Thus, the Vimanas of this age are known as Kritaka, artificial or mechanical. In this way, there are three main types of Vimanas, Vedic airplanes, according to the characteristics of each yuga. Isn't that amazing? So this is there in the Shastras, you know, that the Vimanas exist, UFOs exist. And one time the devotees asked Srila Prabhupada about that, because in the 70s, there was really a lot of controversy about UFOs, mysteries about UFOs, you know. Did the Americans actually have an alien tucked away somewhere? And they had all these different mysteries, and people from all over the world were reporting that they saw UFOs and they were abducted and experimented on by aliens. It was all this thing. So they asked Prabhupada, do UFOs exist? And he said, oh yes. And they asked Prabhupada, are they friendly? And Prabhupada said, the only ones that are friendly, if they come on a swan airplane. Then he said, they're okay. Everybody else, avoid them. So this was Srila Prabhupada. So Kardama Muni created this amazing world, a flying wonderland. It's just amazing, really. When you think about it, when you read the descriptions, and I want to read the next couple of verses, just which explain the wonder of his creation. So, as Prabhupada said in the purport, he was such a powerful mystic yogi. Such a powerful mystic yogi. You know, we have, even in our society today, we have these people that people adore, you know, because they have some mystic power. Right? You have, you know, there was that great yogi who used to produce a little bit of ash or gold, you know, and everybody went, oh, wow, that's so amazing. Here we have Kardama Muni creates this whole floating planet that just moves for his own pleasure and his wife. So I just wanted to read the next couple of chapters, next couple of verses. The next verse is text 16. The opulence of the household of Kardama Muni is described herein. The bed sheets and mattresses were as white as the foam of milk. The chairs and the benches were made of ivory and were covered by cloth of lace and golden filigree. And the conches were made of gold and had very soft pillows. Then the next one is, the walls of the house were made of first-class marble, decorated with valuable jewels. right? So all the walls were first class marble with jewels and everything. There was no need for lights, for the household was illuminated by the rays from these jewels. Amazing, huh? The female members of the household were all amply decorated with jewellery. So all the ladies had wonderful jewellery and cosmetics and so on and so forth. So the purport by Srila Prabhupada. So that was text 17. It is understood from this statement that the opulences of the household of life was exhibited in valuable jewels, ivory, first-class marble, furniture made of gold and jewellery. The clothes are also mentioned as being decorated with golden filigree. Everything actually had some value. It was not like the furniture of the present day, which is cast in valueless plastic or base metal. The way of the Vedic civilization is that whatever was used in household affairs had to be valuable. In case of need, such items of value could be exchanged immediately. Thus once broken and unwanted furniture and paraphernalia were never to be without value. This system is still followed by Indians in household affairs. They keep metal utensils and golden ornaments or silver plates and valuable silk garments with gold embroidery. In case of need, they can have some money in exchange immediately. There are exchanges from the money lenders and the householders. So in the past, they didn't rely on banks who just steal your money. Isn't it amazing? I mean, even in our lifetime, when I first opened up a bank account, you used to get a certain percentage interest, right? And it was something like 15, 17, 20%. Now we get 1% interest on our savings, and then they charge us for having the account. It's just outrageous. So in the Indian cultural system, you used to have your wealth in furniture and clothing and so on and so forth. And still to this day, if you notice, there is a certain time in the year, and if you are a stock market person or you watch the money exchange and the value of gold, there's a certain time in the year that the gold value goes whee, really up high. Did you know that? And that time actually is when the wedding season is in India, because everybody buys gold for their brides. And all of a sudden, it has a worldwide effect, and the value of gold goes skyrocketing. All of a sudden, becomes very valuable. So that is still there. So Srila Prabhupada in this purport criticizes modern civilization. You know, he says that this modern civilization is materially and spiritually without substance. Materially and spiritually without substance. Ruining the earth, Prabhupada says, ruining the earth. In the spiritual world, everything has profound value. Similarly, everything in Kardama Muni's beautiful floating wonderland was of immense value because everything was in the service of the Lord. Everything was utilized in the service of the Lord. That's why, say for example, we create a beautiful temple here. It's not for us to enjoy. It's not for us to sit around and say, wow, I've got such beautiful columns and there's so many beautiful things here. And we've got a beautiful kitchen, you know, for my personal use. It's all for service to the Lord. So Kardama Muni didn't make this whole floating planet just for his personal enjoyment. He made it as a service to God because God, Krishna, wanted this to happen. So in the world today, the material society has no substance. You know, I mean, Prabhupada points out about plastics and things like that. In today's society, it is a major problem. A major problem. The pollution of plastics, the waste in the world today, shoddy workmanship. You know, people don't care about building products that are going to last. They build things that will last for perhaps a year, 2 years. They give you a 2-year guarantee on things, and if it breaks after that, just chuck it out. If you get a toaster from Kmart, it may last for 2 years, and then after that, what? If you went to go and fix it, if you took it to a repair shop, it'll cost you more than buying a new one. So people just, whoop, chuck it out. Next thing, another toaster, and something else, and this and that. So it's a wasteful society. And the result of that is, with our waste, we just chuck everything out, throw everything out. It creates enormous amounts of garbage. Have you ever been to any of these refuge places where all the rubbish goes. It is amazing, amazing. I've just recently joined an interfaith group in the Hume Shire. The Hume Shire is the northern suburbs of Melbourne. And at our inauguration, when we first met all the members of the interfaith, there was another program on at that stage where the council and the fire brigade were explaining to the population of that region in the northern suburbs about this burning that happened. Is anybody aware of it in the news, how this big garbage pile, refuge, was somehow or other set alight, and there were plumes of smoke and people were told to stay inside? Did anybody hear about that? So the firemen, you didn't hear about that? It was amazing. There was so much garbage, right, in this place, in the northern suburbs, and it was like a surrounding suburban area. People had their houses and everything. So somehow or another, and they don't know how, but this rubbish was set alight, and it was all plastics, right? So the fumes from this plastic were super toxic, mm-hmm. and the smoke was billowing out all over the northern suburbs, and the police and the council and the fire brigade said that everybody should just stay indoors. It took them something like 4 days to put out this fire. You know, this was because of this rotting mass, this rubbish, and it put the people in so much danger. Who knows that in a couple of years' time they may develop cancer from this. And this is going on repeatedly. So things that are made today, they become useless very quickly. They only last for a very short time. It was amazing how it was described in this purport, where Prabhupada was saying there was no need for light. There was no need for electricity. So as Kardama Muni was travelling through the darkness of space, the jewels on the walls and the jewels on the denizen there, on the women there, they lit up the whole place. Amazing. And here we have so much trouble again in today's society. There's so much trouble with electricity. People are thinking, how are we going to have the growth of population? How can we have enough electricity for the society? And the electricity companies are putting their bills up because we're using so much more electricity. And the government is having to go to the electricity companies and saying, hey, listen, you can't charge the public so much. It's like an ongoing battle. You know, and then there was the coal mines, they're digging out the coal to generate electricity, and that was causing so much pollution, and they're trying to think of alternative ways. It's just like amazing the hassles that they go through. This material world is just so useless in so many different ways. And then, you know, there's the other thing, then gas. Let's go for gas. Somehow or another, we've got to find gas. And so now there is this shale gas explorations. Anybody know what shale gas explorations are? It's the gas that's captured underneath the deep part of the earth. And there's these pockets of natural gas. So now these big multinational companies can walk on anybody's property and say, excuse me, but I know you have a farm here, but we're going to set up a thing here and extract the gas. Huge arguments with farmers and so on and so forth. So it is just endless. What to speak of the debate at the moment about plastic bags? Everybody knows about what's happening with plastic bags. There's a big concerted effort that they please ban the plastic bags. Every time you go to Coles or Kmart and they give you plastic bags for your groceries, all that ends up in rubbish dumps and into the sea. And people have gone out way far out in the ocean and there's plastic bags floating around everywhere. This is the pollution of these horrible things that are happening in the world today. So it's endless pollution. And this is our material world. So the examples are so extreme. But Kardama Muni had everything completely contained. It was all self-contained. Beautiful thing. So some people have this desire. They perhaps may not read about Kardama Muni. Some may. But others have this desire that they also would like to be in an area which is just like heaven, like a floating heaven in the sky. So they can't produce a floating city in the sky. So now the big thing that they're doing is they're having floating boats, which are like a sanctuary, which are a beautiful Cruising at the moment is one of the most popular tourist destinations. Did you know that? They're building ships that are like basically a small city. One of the major ships, the Queen Mary II, can house 6,000 people on this one boat. 6,000 people. And they have like 7 swimming pools, a surf pool, you name it. They've got it on there. They're trying so hard to enjoy, right? And what happens is, recently, one of these big ships, because the captain was drunk and he was trying to show off to his girlfriend how wonderful he was, he crashed this thing into the side of a rock and so many people died. That was near Italy. And then another incident where everybody, they were out to enjoy on this beautiful cruise ship. You know, they were sitting back and laying back and everything. And everybody got gastro. Everybody got gastro. Gastroenteritis, you know, which is like very unpleasant. And all they were doing was running to the toilet through the whole trip. And they cut off and they had interviews with people, you know, how did you enjoy the trip? It was horrible. All I did was run to the toilet. So this is the material world. They try so hard to get something like what Kardama Muni has got and they fall flat. It just doesn't work. And then what happens is that the pollution that one of these big ships generates is enormous. I heard this documentary on what actually the pollution that it generates is. It's just like the oil that they use to power this enormous vessel. I mean, you know, when you think Kardama Muni, just by his mind, he was traveling from different planet to planet. But if we're going from here to Bali, say, for example, on one of these cruise ships, the amount of oil that's burnt and that oil that they use for those big turbine engines is not the ordinary oil or petrol that we use in our cars. It is loaded with lead to actually push this big craft. And this lead goes into the atmosphere. And it's like just outrageous. And then if you have 6,000 people all with gastro, their sewage system is shocking and it pollutes the oceans. So this is the material world and they're all just trying so hard to enjoy, you know. But it's enjoyment without the consciousness of being a devotee, without being a servant of Krishna. So as Prabhupada says, this material society is materially and spiritually completely without substance. And we see that on a daily basis. On a daily basis, the progress of Kali Yuga, the progress of ignorance is just increasing. You know, there's no value in life anymore. The value of life is just like negligible. It's nothing for someone to slaughter little babies in the womb. They have no concept of all that this was a life. There's this beautiful YouTube clip at the moment that the devotees have put up about the growth of a baby in the womb of a mother. Has anybody seen this? It's absolutely amazing. And from the Bhagavatam, it goes through the stages that the child, when it gets consciousness and how it feels and when it starts to pray to the Lord and everything. And with this, the cameras that they've got nowadays, you see the baby actually in the womb growing. And there's a commentary by the devotees as to what that baby is then going through at that time. Absolutely amazing. So, you know, there's no care. There's immorality. Oh, I want to enjoy sex life, but I don't want to have the responsibilities of having a child. Let's just abort that baby. Just kill that life. Millions and millions of lives are killed like this. Amazing. So there's no moral, there's no real understanding of what they're doing. They're sinful. Sinful in so many ways, the slaughter of cows, wholesale slaughter of animals, so many different things. And other things, you know, just in our entertainment, there's so much more gross entertainment. We were talking yesterday. We had a meeting yesterday, our child protection officers had a meeting here in Melbourne. And we were talking about the level of swearing in our society. The level of swearing in our society. It is now nothing to hear a person on the radio or on the TV using the four-letter word. Nothing. In our day, I mean, if my parents heard me say bloody, it was like, whoa, how dare you? You know, you don't swear in this house. You know, wash your mouth out with soap, you know. Yeah. And my mother was so upset. I'll never forget. My mother was the sweetest person. Sweetest person. She never chastised me. But one day she thought that I swore at our dog. She thought that I swore. And she gave me a clip across the ears. And I said, "Mom, why did you do that?" And she said, "You swore." And I said, "No, I didn't." So this was how serious it was. But nowadays, it's like an everyday occurrence. If you switch on the television, you know, you hear people, or you watch a film on TV or something, you have to really watch out for the kids, because you hear this horrible language. And it's a negative vibration that it puts out. And now we're hearing that some of our devotee kids are sometimes using these four-letter words. And this is really not acceptable. And our parents have to check this, have to check that. So this is the material world that we live in. And Srila Prabhupada, with his great wisdom, brought this Vedic culture to us. He exported this from the spiritual world for us. And it all starts with the chanting of the holy name. Prabhupada brought this great wisdom, the same wisdom that motivates Kardama Muni and all the great sages. He brought this for us to this material world. And it all starts by just chanting, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And then from there it goes on. So Vedic culture, as explained in this purport, had no wastage. There was no need for anything. It had value. That was all gold and wealth and riches. And yet, yet we see that the basic principles of simple living and high thinking, which is the principle of Vedic culture, the simple living and high thinking. Recently, actually, I had an interesting realization, you know. I mean, if you ever go to our farming community, you know, if you go to Hare Krishna Valley, and you go to Keshava's and Atulya's house. Has anybody ever been to Keshava's and Atulya's house? Isn't it wonderful? You know, it's made out of mud brick. This is really Vedic culture. And on the floor, the flooring is cow dung. And it is just the most wonderful feeling to have your bare feet on their floor. Now, we can get fancy carpets, wool carpet and lino and all these different floor panelings, but I've never experienced a more comfortable, vibrationally comfortable, just by putting your feet on it. It was like, wow, that feels really good, of this dung floor, cow dung floor, you know. So this is Vedic culture. Compared to that, just recently, as you know, my wife and I shifted to a new house in Tarnit, which was put up like that in a couple of months, and they're putting them up everywhere. And within a couple of months, the place is already deteriorating. There are things already, the doors are coming off, and there's things are tilting over. This is 3 months. You know, it's just outrageous. So this was a wonderful creation that Kardama Muni made. An absolute wonderful creation. But why did he, we have to remember, why did he make this wonderful creation? Why did he make this wonderful creation? So going back over the story, we're getting to the end of this narration of the story of Kapiladeva. We have to remember that in the beginning it was all about Swayambhuva Manu, you know, great ruler, powerful king, who ruled the whole world. The whole world. And he wanted, as every good father wants, he wants a really nice husband for his daughter. And his daughter was Devahuti. Devahuti was exceptionally beautiful. Exceptionally beautiful. She had all good qualities. You know, she was physically beautifully proportioned, beautiful hair, beautiful eyes. She was humble, she was chaste, everything, you know. So he wanted the best husband for her. But, you know, being a great devotee, Swayambhuva Manu was such a powerful man and such a great devotee, he wanted a devotee for his daughter. As do all the Grihastha men, don't we? We would like to see our daughters grow up with a very nice, you know, Vaishnava husband. Doesn't always happen, but that's our wish. So he was very pleased with Kardama Muni. And Kardama Muni was a great sage, great mystic, great powerful yogi. And he had great powers of austerity. He was so austere. has been explained in the previous verses. The power of Gautama Muni and his austerity was just amazing. You know, we can do a little Ekadasi austerity and we think, oh God, I'm without grains this week, the day, you know. And it's like, oh, the end of the earth, you know. My God, how am I going to do without my chapatis today? It's like, whoa, you know. And here we have Gautama Muni who could actually, you know, perform such great austerities. He performed such great austerities that even Lord Vishnu was amazed at his austerities. And Lord Vishnu cried because of Gautama Muni's austerity. So much so that a lake was formed of the Lord's tears. And that was Bindu Sarova in India. It was formed by the tears of the Lord after he saw the austerities that Gautama Muni was performing. This is an amazing thing. So he was so powerful. So by the arrangement of the Lord and by the sweet will and perseverance of Swayambhu Vamanu, Devahuti and Gautama Muni married. So we read in the previous verses, they married. And Gautama Muni was still very austere. He was living in the forest, matted hair, the real sage. And Devahuti, being a chaste and loving wife, she followed in everything that he did. Everything, to the letter. You know, she was just as austere and just as renounced. And she renounced all... You've got to remember, like, you know, she came from a household where he was the king of the world. She had every opulence. She had everything. You know, she was so beautiful that when they were wanting to choose the marriage of Devahuti, the demigods would view her from their airplanes, from their UFOs, right? They would view her, and they were so captivated by her beauty that they would fall to the ground. They would fall out of their planes. Right? That's how beautiful she was. Oh, my God, she's so beautiful. That's how beautiful she was, you know? And so she went with Gautama Muni to the forest and created all these austerities and did all these austerities, you know, for the service of her husband. And she served her husband. Not only did she do the austerities, but she served her husband and she worshipped Krishna. She was a great devotee of the Lord. And so, after many, many years, her beauty started to decline, which happens if you're living an austere life. Your hair starts to get matted. She had beautiful plait and so on, but that all mattered. She became skinny. It's described how she became skinny. I'm really glad that I didn't get the previous verse that Sukadev did yesterday. Anybody remember what that verse was? Hang on, I'll read it out to you. It was really interesting. I was thinking, oh my God, do I have to give this verse? Where Prabhupada, hang on, where is it? 14. Prabhupada says here, these principles are strictly followed by grihasthas, da-da-da, and he goes on, to be too fat is not very good for spiritual advancement. Right? Rather, one should reduce because of one's course of fat is an impediment to progress of spiritual understanding. When I looked, I thought, am I giving this one? Oh, no. Anyway, by the Lord's arrangement, I'm not giving that one. So anyway, Devahuti performed such great austerities. You know, she just was right there with her husband, 100%. And it's a great example for us grihasthas, you know. So, but then there came a time when, you know, as a womanly inclination and also a man's inclination, they wanted to have offspring, they wanted to have children. And so that was the reason. And Gautama Muni knew that this was a very special occasion, that the child that would be born would be exceptional. And so he made the arrangements of this beautiful floating wonderland, this airplane of immense beauty and immense power. Because to actually procreate in a very austere manner, in a very, you know, cold and unforgiving area, is not really the right environment. So it's described that when one wants to actually procreate, do the proper samskara, that one arranges a nice opulent environment for that occasion to happen. So I remember in our life when we decided that we would have children and we performed the samskaras, chanting of the rounds and everything, and the temple president at that stage, I told him in the morning, I said, look, we're trying for a child today. And he said, oh yeah, that's okay, it's okay. But he kept me busy the whole day, right? He must have forgotten. And at home, Bhakti had made the arrangements. She'd cleaned the whole house. She draped beautiful curtains everywhere and made it really nice and cooked a nice prasadam and everything. And she's waiting for Bhakti to come home because we were going to create a Vaishnava. And eventually, Balaram said, and now we have to go, Balaram was the temple president, now we have to go to such and such. And I said, excuse me, Prabhu, I chanted 64 rounds today. oh my God, I totally forgot. And he quickly drove me home. So the house was nicely decorated. So this is part of the Vedic tradition, that we do the proper samskaras. So this was what Kodama Muni did. He created this fantastic mansion for this event to happen. And the result of that was the beautiful birth of Kapila Muni, you know, Lord Kapila. And so Lord Kapila was there, and you know, and he created this all out of his mind, his power of his mind. You know, this is so powerful. Such a magnificent facility. So Lord Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that the mind can be controlled by constant practice and detachment. So this was, he was able to do this because he was totally detached to the whole event, you know. And so there's this, I learned this from my Buddhist friend in Interfaith. He related this story one time of how this person came to Buddha and asked Buddha, how do I control my mind, you know. And Buddha said there are three methods in which you can control your mind, three ways that you control your mind. And he said, by practice, by practice, by practice. So it's the same as what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, whenever and wherever the mind wanders due to the flickering unsteady nature, you know, must bring that back and control the mind. You must have it back, control it. So I just wanted to read Srila Prabhupada's purport about this. You know, this is Kodama Muni who had this great power. And Prabhupada in the purport to that 626 says, the nature of the mind is flickering and unsteady. But a self-realized yogi has control of the mind. So Kodama Muni had total control of his mind. The mind should not control him. Right? One who controls the mind and therefore the senses as well. Because if you control your mind, you control the senses. You know, when the mind, when you get captured by the mind, then all of a sudden the senses go along with it, you know. Oh, you want to enjoy this. You really do want to enjoy this. Okay, we're going to enjoy it. So Krishna says, Prabhupada says here, so one who controls his senses is called a Goswami or Swami, and one who controls and one who is controlled by the mind is called a Godas or a servant of the senses. A Goswami knows the standard of sense happiness. In the transcendental sense happiness, the senses are engaged in service of Rishikesh or the supreme owner of the senses, Krishna. Serving Krishna with purified senses is called Krishna consciousness. That is the way of bringing the senses under full control. What is more, that is the highest perfection of yoga practice. So Kodama Muni had full control of these yoga processes and was a complete story, was a complete person who had that under control. So the story goes on later then. After the little child Kapila grows up, Kodama Muni says, hasta la vista, I'm going back to the forest, your son will look after you. And he did the needful thing. And then later, Kapila Dev was brought up in this beautiful mansion, this beautiful floating palace. And then he preached to his mother, as we read the different preaching that he did. He gave Sankhya knowledge, which was the conclusion, in the conclusion of Sankhya knowledge, is bhakti yoga, is devotional service to Krishna. So then when Kapila had instructed his mother, he asked his mother, could I please leave? And the mother also was very pleased, but in a sense she was also very sad. It was because she had a great love for Kapila. I mean, can you imagine if God was your son? You know, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is your son. I mean, we love our sons. But I mean, if he was the Supreme Personality of Godhead, you'd be pretty attached, right? So Devahuti was reluctant. She was sad to let her son go. And in other histories, who else had a son that was the Supreme and was sad to see him go? Who? Huh? Sorry? Mahaprabhu, very good, yeah. Who else? Sri Ram. What happened there?
He was sent to the forest.
And who was Ram's mother?
Dasharatha.
Who was mother? Kaushala. And she was so sad to see Ram go. And Krishna also. When Krishna left Vrindavan, you know, Mother Yashoda was really heartbroken. Here goes my little boy. And you'll experience that too, you know, when your children leave, there's a pang on the heart. But this was Krishna. So, Devahuti understood that, let her son go, but was fully surrendered to him and fully understood the instructions that he gave. And so she worshipped him at the deity of Kapila, worshipped him, performed austerities. Again, it's described in the different chapters how her hair became grey, and she was very mindful and felt the Lord's presence even more so in the heart. So this is also, Krishna will manifest himself in the heart and you will feel his presence. At the last class that I mentioned, even in our Krishna consciousness, you will feel the presence of Krishna just a tiny bit, and that will enhance and grow as we chant and as we grow in our Krishna consciousness. So she felt this immense presence of Krishna in the heart and was able to do these austerities. And all attraction for this wonderland that Kapila Muni had, Kadama Muni had created, you know, was of no significance to her. She wasn't attracted to it at all. And so this is an amazing thing to understand. And the Bhagavad Gita 2:59, Visaya vinivartante niraharasha dehiha rasa varyam raso prasya param dristram nivartante. Okay, higher taste. The higher taste. The embodied soul may be restricted from sense enjoyment, though the taste for sense objects remains. But ceasing such engagements by experiencing a higher taste, one he is fixed in consciousness. Krishna says that. So we have to have this higher taste. We have to get that ruchi, that taste from somewhere else. And she experienced that. Her taste was love for God, love for Krishna, love for her son, Kapiladeva. So Rupa Goswami states some analogies in this regard, this higher taste. And he warns people in the Nectar of Devotion, he warns people, don't go to the banks of the Jamuna and see this little boy Krishna, because your life will be ruined. Your material life will be ruined. You will never be satisfied with anything else except that beautiful little blue-eyed boy, blue-bodied boy. So it's compared to, Prabhupada gives the Vedic analogy, but in the West it's like having $1,000,000 and, you know, you have no harm in spending $1. So when you have all the opulences of understanding and loving Krishna, anything in this material world is nothing. Another example that's given is like a candle to the sun. You know, you hold a candle up to the sunlight. So this material world, yeah, there's a little bit of pleasure, but it's like a little candlelight compared to the sun. And another analogy that Prabhupada gives is that at night time, you have the fireflies and they have little light. And he compares that to the material world. But then when the sun rises, they're insignificant. They don't exist anymore. So this is it. When you experience a higher taste in Krishna consciousness, you can give up all different sense gratifications and get that taste, that ruchi. So the charms of Krishna way overweigh the charms of this material world. It completely nullifies the charms of this material world. And Devahuti had that realization, had pure bhakti yoga. And she didn't want for anything else. She didn't want, even though there's great opulence there, she couldn't care less. So that's the perfection of human life. Perfection of human life is that we can see everything that we have in this material world and utilize it in the service of Krishna. So we may be driving a really nice car, we may be living in a nice new house, we may be doing so many different things, but the point of it is, it's all Krishna's. And I'm utilizing it in Krishna's service. If we try to, in some way or another, utilize it for our own sense gratification, we've got problems. Because if you have that, it's bounding us. It eventually will make us suffer. But if we give everything to Krishna, as Devahuti did, it doesn't matter where you live. You can have either in poverty or in great opulence. It doesn't make any difference. You will be completely happy. So everything has a profound value in relationship to God. Everything has a profound value in relationship to God. So we should try to offer God the very best, the most pure things. So in our efforts with deity worship, we try and give the best to Krishna. We make the best sets. You know, Chinchurupa and the devotees go to great lengths to make beautiful sets for the deities. You know, and at Janmashtami, they have this beautiful new day set and night set, and everybody is in awe. Wow, look how beautiful and opulent the Lord is, you know. And then we get new jewelry, you know, and some expensive things. We can't have too much expensive things because the nature of humanity is that sometimes a person in lesser Krishna consciousness may steal them. So, but anyway, whatever, you know, whatever we get, we try and get the best. Prabhudas will get the best cars that we can use in Sankirtan. You know, we get the best equipment for our kitchen, right? Because it's Krishna's. Krishna wants the best, and we try to get the best. And this was Prabhupada's a motto always. You know, if you're going to get something in the service of Krishna, get it good. Don't get some cheap thing. So the thing is that we should care for the things that are Krishna's. We should look after the things that are Krishna's. It's a very important thing. You know, we have to have this understanding that everything that we're utilizing in the service of Krishna is Krishna's property. So sometimes we have so many different pujaris. And whoever is a pujari, those of us that are pujaris here, know that sometimes there's a bit of negligence in as far as Krishna's jewelry and Krishna's paraphernalia, correct? Like sometimes we, I've got to go to sleep, or I've got to go and get some prasadam, and they dress the deities very quickly and grab the jewelry off, and the jewelry breaks, or they just throw it into the cupboard. Bang, you know. It's not looking after Krishna's jewelry and Krishna's paraphernalia. Or say, for example, if we have the opportunity to render some service in Krishna's car, we should look after Krishna's car. You know, we should drive safely, drive with care. Don't leave our bottles and prasadam and things in the car. Don't let the car get dirty. I'm preaching to myself as well. It's something that we do, and it's a negligent thing because everything belongs to Krishna. And in the kitchen, now we have such wonderful equipment. And so much effort has gone into by the kitchen staff and the managers of the staff to make sure that this equipment will last us for a long time. It's Krishna's equipment. We should really be careful. So there's a mantra that we should use on a daily basis. My wife came up with this. If you care, you take care. If you care, you take care. So if you care about Krishna's paraphernalia, if you care about Krishna, you will take care and you will look after everything that is Krishna's. So the thing is Krishna wants us to joyfully serve him in all circumstances, in opulent circumstances and not. So Janmashtami is coming up. I'll finish up with this. Janmashtami is coming up, and there are so many people that are going to be coming. So this is their time that some people, for the first time, they'll glance at Radha Ballabha, at Krishna. You know, like what Rupa Goswami says, don't go looking at the deities, you'll be gone. I remember, there's a photo of me, and I put it on Facebook actually, one of the first times I came to the temple, it was the Swing Festival. It was Julan Yatra. And there's a photo of me with a big beard and Western clothes, and I'm swinging the deities, right? And I remember I looked at Krishna and I looked at Radharani's eyes, and something happened to me. 50, 40 years later, here I am. You know, so don't look at the deities. So we got this Julan Yatra and Janmashtami coming, and all these different guests are coming. Some very important guests are coming, actually. And the potency of actually looking after people and presenting Krishna, there's one really fascinating thing that happened recently. I just found out about it yesterday. We had the opportunity of hosting, we got a call from some of our friends that this prince from Jodhpur, is it Jodhpur?
Jaipur.
No, not Jaipur, but Jodhpur. So the prince, right, who is a multimillionaire, right, was coming to the temple. Okay, and Sukadev Prabhu showed him the whole temple, the kitchen facility, saw the deities and everything. and served him prasadam and so on and so forth, right? So him and I put on a little thing on Facebook, you know, this prince who's worth millions and millions of dollars came and was at the temple. So he reposted that Facebook item on his Facebook page. And he said, when I went to the Hare Krishna, there were two holy places that he went to in Melbourne here. Can you guess what the first place was? It was the MCG. Oh, that's a very sacred place. You know. So he went to, I'm kidding. So he went to the MCG and he came to Melbourne Temple, right? So he wrote on his web, on his Facebook page, I went to the Hare Krishna Temple and they made me sit on the floor and take prasadam. So this is a prince who was sitting on the throne and he said, and I loved it. This was really, I was humbled before the Lord and I felt so great. You know, so I said to Sukadev, did you actually get him to sit on the floor? Yeah, I got him to sit on the floor and we served prasad. This was a prince. He's actually a relative, a great-great-great-great-grandson of Mirabai. A great sage, you know, great saintly person, Mirabai. Great Muni, great yogi. So anyway, he came. So this was really... So then he saw this thing and he put it on his Facebook page. In Australia alone... 80,000 likes in Australia. What to speak of in India? Now people saw this. I came to the Hare Krishna temple. They gave me prasadam. I was humbled by sitting on the floor before the Lord and I liked it. This prince was humbled. You know, this is good Krishna consciousness, you know. So I just thought I'd mention that. So Jamashtami is coming up and there's a great opportunity to serve different people. Now, I'm bringing some very important people to Jamashtami this year. Ted Bailey is coming again, and other members of Parliament. You know, you all know Ted, right? Ted was this man that helped us get the $500,000 for the kitchen. So we're putting in another plea, another grant for another $500,000 to expand the theatre and the prasadam hall and so on, right? So it is important to us that we really are on our best behaviour and really look after these people that are coming so that they are favourable again. And so this is an important thing. One of the other people that is coming, and this is quite interesting, is a movie star. Now, there is a slight chance that Aishwarya Rai may come. You know, she's just some movie star. You haven't heard of her, have you? Have you heard of her? Yeah. She's reasonably attractive. Not as nice as Deva Hootie, but she's reasonably attractive, right? So she's in Melbourne and she may come. And there's another lady, a movie star called Kushuba. Is it? Kushu Sundar. Kushbu. Kushbu Sundar. Anybody know her? Where's the South Indians? Were you part of building a temple for her or...? So she's coming also to the temple. She wants to come and see Krishna. So this is fascinating. Now she, on her Facebook page, she has 3 million followers. So we've got to make her really welcome. All the ladies really go out to make her welcome. And so she's definitely coming. So this is really important. So as aliens, we're not doing too bad, right? We're here on a mission, right? We're not here to be enthralled by this material world. We know that we're eventually going in our UFO and going back home, back to Godhead, correct? The swan carrier is going to come. The Vishnu Dutas are going to come. Oh, thank you. See you later. We're out of here. So this is the beautiful thing. We're going back to our real home, our real destination, our real place where we belong, to the spiritual world, all by the grace of Sri Sri Radha Balabha, Sri Sri Gaurinitai, Jagannath Ji Baladev Subhadra, and His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada ki! Thank you very much, Prabhu. Any comments or questions at all? Yes, Prabhu.
Do still people from other planets come and visit this earth
planet? Yeah, they do. We don't see them. And again, as Prabhupada said, if you do happen to encounter Prabhupada didn't deny that UFOs exist. He said if they do come, don't have anything to do with them, because then they're of the lower heavenly planets. Yeah, they are from the lower heavenly planets, and some are even further down. They're in the reptilian planets. There's some descriptions like that. So you just chant Hare Krishna and say, I don't want anything to do with you guys, you know, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. They won't touch you. Just pray to Lord Nisringadev. We got the ultimate weapons here, you know. Yeah, they're there.
This question maybe sounds a little bit, but like, I know some young people that are kind of quite well, and they tell me they met some persons who got taken by UFOs.
Oh, yeah.
And they came from the Andromeda Galaxy.
Uh-huh.
Is it lower
country? Yep. Lower heavenly planets, actually.
Is it mentioned in the scriptures, like about the Andromeda galaxies?
Well, no, it's not in that terminology, but there are lower heavenly planets.
Okay.
That, you know, but this place, Earth, for the heavenly demigods and that, is like the toilet.
Yeah.
They don't want to come here at all. At the present, not during Kali Yuga. They used to come quite often during the other yugas, and they would attend different yugas and so on and so forth in bodily form.
Yeah.
But nowadays they don't come, you know. But, you know, still the great sages do come. Prabhupada often, you know, would mention to his devotees if they'd had a kirtan, and they'd say, did you see them? And the devotees would go, who? Oh, Narad Muni was here, and, you know. And Lord Shiva is here, you know. So Prabhupada could see them. We can't see them. We're so gross and covered. As you develop in spiritual consciousness, you'll probably be able to see it, you know. But yeah, they still visit, but it's not really... The ones that visit here are the ones coming from down below.
Yeah.
And like Prabhupada said, you know, don't entertain any of them. If you come across any of them, just chant Hare Krishna, you have nothing to do with it. The only ones you care about are the ones that are coming on the Swan airplane. That's the one. You think, yep, I'll get myself a lift with that one. Thank you. I'm with you. Any other comments or questions, please?
Well,
thank you.
Just a quick one.
Yep.
Prabhupada actually, they landed on
Reno
when they're planning.
Whoa, here we go. That's right. Prabhupada said they didn't go to the moon. And I don't have a theory on it. And I trust in Prabhupada. And so it's one of these questions, did they land on the moon, didn't they land on the moon, where I leave it open. I trust Prabhupada. Right? And there are many instances where they say they couldn't have gone through the Van Halen belt, which is the radiation, and that it was all a trick. More and more people start to believe that. You can't always believe what the materialists are putting out there. So Prabhupada was adamant. He said, no, they didn't go. They couldn't have gone there. So I believe Prabhupada, because he's been right in every other thing in my life. So I don't understand it. A lot of devotees left over that. Did you know that? When that happened in the 70s, and a lot of senior devotees, even his secretary, said, you know, that's nonsense, they did land, and left Prabhupada. So it's one of these questions that, you know, you have to, I don't know the way or how, because I'm just an ignorant little ant in the whole cosmic sphere, but I trust Prabhupada. That's the key. And Prabhupada will look after you. So even though I don't understand how it all could happen, but I trust Prabhupada. If he said they didn't go there, then they didn't go there. I don't know how, but you know, you understand?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a controversial thing. It's one of those controversies. But I think it's something like 50% of the American population don't believe they went to the moon now. Isn't it? Something like that? Some huge percentage. So anyway, we'll see what happens. Wait and see. Our kids will see different things happening in the world. But with the rise of Krishna consciousness, this is the thing, you know. We're making such a difference in the world. We're making such powerful differences in the world, you know. And that's we should all really have that in mind, that we want to bring people to this understanding, this Vedic culture, you know. And even in our lifetime, you know, if it wasn't for this movement, the environmental movement wouldn't be going the way it's going, really, quite frankly. People turning to vegetarianism, people being aware of abortions and so on. Like, say, for example, even with Al Gore, with his Inconvenient Truth. Has anybody seen that video, that YouTube clip? Inconvenient Truth. In the first one, he said nothing about cow slaughter and the methane gas that these big, huge cow slaughter things, they were the major cause of global warming. They're massive cow and animal pens and stuff. And then after that, the devotees and different people became quite vocal and said, you know, yeah, you've covered everything, but you haven't covered this. And he agreed and he became a vegetarian. So he understood, you know. So the devotees have so much power that we don't realize that we have. And that's why it's really important that we mix with communities. It's why it's important that we mix with different organizations. Like, people ask me, why are you involved with Interfaith? It's so important because we get our point across. We get out, we meet with people, other leaders. You know, we meet with people and give them the truth, Vedic truth. This is what we all should do. Like, I'm looking for someone, because we've moved to the northern, western suburbs, I'm looking for somebody in the Dandenong region to take over my work that I've been doing with the Dandenong Interfaith. You know, it's very important. I've got to find someone that's enthusiastic to actually take, male or female, that would be willing to take over my role there. You know, we have to infiltrate into society. We can't just stay in this little temple and think that everything is okay, we'll make it from here. No, we have to bring this knowledge to other people. You know, we have to show Krishna's face to other people so they become attracted. And the truth about what this material world is. It is a toilet. It is not no place for a lady or a gentleman. We need to get out of here. Okay? Srila Prabhupada ki! Thank you, Bruce.